This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency. Your Israeli property is in good hands.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Chodesh, Shavua Tov, Gam Chodesh Tov. We, of course, had Rosh Chodesh over the weekend and Ramadan Karim, because we are not only into the month of Adar, but also into the fasting month of Ramadan now for our Muslim listeners. And, of course, the month of Adar, as I mentioned last week, has a lot of action going on, not only with Purim coming up, where we are supposed to be very joyful, and of course our joy is very tempered by the ongoing hostage situation, but one of the things that is very synonymous with the month of Adar is Zachor, to remember, and to remember Amalek. We are told Zachor Amalek, to remember Amalek. Amalek, mm-hmm. of course, were the people that tried to conquer the Jewish people when they came out of Egypt, the first tribe actually that tried to conquer the Jewish people when they came out of Egypt on their way to Sinai. And Amalek has since then been used as a synonym for people trying to destroy the Jews. And of course, in our modern day, it's not very difficult for us to equate who are the people of Amalek nowadays trying to destroy the Jews. And one of the interpretations of the term Zachor, to remember Amalek, is not only about remembering who the people are who want to destroy us, but also to remember who we are as opposed to them. And that message has come out so clearly from some of the hostages, many of whom were entirely secular, had never really followed any Jewish tradition in their lives. And in all honesty, growing up in Israel, when you are amongst people who are also of a similar kind of character and a similar kind of approach to yours, you don't feel the need to have to stand up and be any different or to potentially bring your own symbols in order to signify who you are, because it comes very naturally. But that natural feeling was taken away from them in the tunnels of Gaza when they were faced with the modern day Amalek, when they were faced with people who have an entirely different approach. And for many of the Israelis who were held in Gaza, they began for the first time in their lives to somehow cling on to their Jewish traditions, whether it be say the Shema, or to think about religious symbols, or to do things, to sing things, to say things, to believe things, which help them to cling on to their Jewish identity in those adverse circumstances. And there are so many different stories that come out of people who insisted upon saying Kiddush Friday evening when they'd never done it before, or they insisted on saying the Shema and praying every day and thinking about a God and thinking about their Jewish traditions. When faced with that evil and we're faced with that adversity, they somehow had the real need to hang on to who they were and where they came from, and therefore to bring those symbols, those practices, those traditions to the tunnels of Gaza. The stories are just really, really incredible, and I encourage people to try and look them up to see some of the things that happened in the face of adversity about remembering who we are, and of course remembering our who our enemies are in the process.
Yeah, so interesting to think about it. That in fact I've spoken to people in Israel, secular Jews, not who have made the comment that they were going to keep Shabbat or do a little bit more, because if the hostages can do it, well, why shouldn't they? So you almost see this ripple effect coming back to Israel, and you just but notice the magnitude of what this is all about. Anthony, Israel has decided to cut off supplies moving into Gaza. That's after Hamas indicated that it was unwilling to continue a process to release hostages. Where are things now, and where do they likely go from here?
Well, we've now reached the end of the first phase. The first phase said we will have released to us 33 hostages in return for some thousands of Palestinian prisoners who have been released from Israeli jails. And of course, the ceasefire, the fact that the IDF has been quiet in terms of the operations in Gaza. There have been very, very few military maneuvers going on in Gaza, one or two essential ones in order to put out particular fires. But in general, the IDF operations in Gaza essentially ceased, even though a certain presence of IDF soldiers still remain in Gaza, a very limited presence of IDF soldiers. And for example, the Philadelphia corridor is under discussion. The Netzarim corridor was completely given up, and people were allowed to move freely from the north, from the south to the north back in Gaza. So a lot of freedoms were given as part of the ceasefire in order to allow things to return to some level of normality. Having said all of that, and having reached the end of the first phase, the intention was that the second phase would begin, and the second phase would involve the release of the remaining hostages, all of them, and that also would involve a more permanent ceasefire, but critically would also involve Hamas being removed from power in Gaza. That was always part of phase two, which had been agreed upon by all the parties prior to the implementation of phase one. Now, whether or not there was a true intention to allow phase two to proceed in that way remains a subject of some discussion, and I'm certainly skeptical about whether phase two would ever have managed to go into existence, because it just seemed like some of those things, for example, the release of all the hostages, the removal of Hamas from power, all of that seemed to me to be too extreme for Hamas to simply agree to it. And I think that what Hamas really wanted was phase one, to get the prisoners out of jail, to try and get some support, potentially some kudos from the Palestinian street for getting those prisoners released. They can take credit for the fact that those prisoners were released, and to put a ceasefire in place to allow things in Gaza to return to some level of normality. For Israel, phase one was really all about the release of the hostages. And to that extent, we've achieved, at least in part, the release of the hostages. Those who have come home, some of whom have needed severe medical attention. Emily Damari, for example, yesterday underwent surgery on her hand in order to fix the damage that was done during her captivity in Gaza. She says she owns her hand and she's okay with the fingers missing, but there was still some pain that she was suffering and some work that needed to be done to fix her hand, and also her leg, which we haven't seen, which was shot. So there was a lot of medical attention that was needed, and we've seen people come home in emaciated conditions and needed medical attention. And we've of course seen some of our dead bodies come home for burial, all of which has been really, really important psychologically and physically for us. So that was phase one. Now, there's been an attempt to somehow allow phase one to roll on during the period of Ramadan, which we're in now, and of course through Pesach, which is coming up soon. There was an attempt by Steve Witkoff, who's the White House, the special envoy for the White House, to try to somehow roll phase one on a little, which means continued release of hostages, continued ceasefire, and of course, by extension, also release of further Palestinian prisoners. That would have been the logical extension to phase one. Hamas have said no, they're not willing to do that. And I suspect that Hamas have kind of regained the upper ground here because they've managed somehow to take advantage of those hostage releases to create those ceremonies and to create some presence in the Gaza Strip to show their strength to their people and indeed to the outside world. And I suspect that they've achieved what they wanted to achieve to show themselves to still be in some level of control. And it seems highly unlikely under those circumstances that anybody would demand of them and that they would agree to giving up power in the Gaza Strip. Of course, for Israel, it's a non-negotiable. Hamas cannot be allowed to continue to rule in the Gaza Strip. So Hamas have said no to the rolling on of phase one during Ramadan and during Pesach. And so the Israeli government said, well, we are not simply going to continue the ceasefire without hostages being released, because the ceasefire was one of the conditions. The other condition, of course, was that hostages would be released. So there needs to be a quid pro quo. And also, of course, Israel has let huge amounts of goods and services into Gaza, truckloads of goods going in on a daily basis. That has also been one of the compromises that Israel has given to allow all of those trucks to go into Gaza with essential and indeed non-essential goods for the Gaza Strip. So yesterday, the Israeli government decided that they needed to grab onto whatever levers are available to them right now, with Hamas saying no more hostages being released, then that needs to come at a price. You can't simply say, oh, from our perspective, everything will be the same. We will continue the ceasefire. We will continue to allow goods into Gaza. We will continue all the things that we gave up on in phase one, except that we don't get anything in return for that. So that didn't seem to be a logical situation, which is why the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday said that he will not continue to allow those trucks to go into Gaza. There's been talk about even cutting off power from Gaza. And we understand that the IDF senior brass are now meeting in order to discuss what's next in terms of potentially breaking the ceasefire and continuing military operations in Gaza.
So yeah, certainly something that will be that is very fluid, because obviously there's going to be a lot of pressure on all sides. The IDF inquiry into the events of October 7th have been published. Does it conclude anything?
Yeah, it doesn't make for happy reading. It really doesn't. And a lot of admissions made by the IDF of failures around the events of October the 7th. The outgoing Chief of General Staff, Herzi Halevi, who only has another day or two in office, until he is replaced later this week, has been going around in the South to talk about what he feels about the events of October the 7th. And from the outset, he has said that he feels personally responsible for the failures that happened in the lead up to October the 7th. And he spoke particularly about intelligence failures. Now, for many of us, with the benefit of hindsight, there were some really obvious things that happened. One of the things, for example, that seemed to be such an obvious symbol was the number of SIM cards that were activated on the night of October the 6th, prior to the attack taking place the following day. And that was detected by Israeli intelligence, except that it wasn't responded to. So Herzi Halevi, without trying to defend it, has said, look, that was an obvious sign that we should have picked up on, and we did pick up on. The problem, of course, is, and the thing that many of us don't know or didn't know, is that an event like that, with SIM cards being lit up in those numbers, had apparently taken place at least 12 times in the previous 12-month period. So this was already not considered to be a unique event. Now, if the IDF had responded to those previous 12 times in the way that they ought to have responded on October the 7th, there might have been a much different outcome, because the IDF might well have been blamed for starting a war when, in fact, they were simply responding to intelligence information which would never have gone down as an explanation in the international community. So there were many, many sensitivities surrounding responses and over-responses, not only in terms of the cost to Israel, but potentially what it might precipitate, and Israel might be blamed for beginning to create a situation which really wasn't Israel's beginning. So many different things that have come out of this IDF report, and perhaps we'll talk about them in snippets over the coming weeks. But one of the main, I think, questions which remains coming out of this IDF report into October the 7th is why there is not a national inquiry, a national committee, a commission of inquiry established investigate what happened. The IDF have done their job, and they've done as much as they can, and they've made that public, and they've been going to talk about what the report has generated and the conclusions that the report has reached. But we, I think, need a much higher level report at the national level. And this is one of the main stumbling blocks that we're seeing in our society right now, is the government's reluctance to agree a national commission of inquiry, when I think there's little doubt that it really is required.
Very, very interesting. And what do you think? Do you think that there needs to be a commission of inquiry, or does this paint enough of a picture that the knowledge is known and lessons can be learned? I'd love to hear that from you. 0618951019. It's 8:01. You can catch Anthony Reich tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency, your Israeli property is in good hands.